Welcome everybody to another episode of the MMA Barn Burner Show presented by Bet the Farm Podcast. I am Brandon the Pig Plotnick, and as usual, joined by the burn dog himself, Wesley Bernero. Bernero, you ready to get some wins here?
We have an absolutely loaded betting card for once, and it was odd that we agreed on everything, almost, yeah. Except for one.
Once we get to the main card, we might, you know, it might be a little dicey, but yeah. There's a lot of bets that we'd liked. I mean, it's a tricky card because there's a lot of big favorites mixed in with a lot of really closed lines, and those closed lines, there's some good dogs that we can work on.
Yeah, I mean, this is a bettor's card if I've ever seen one. A lot of the close favorites are priced a little bit off, in my opinion, where the favorite should be a much higher favorite. We're going to address those. But I think it's something that if you know what you're doing when it comes to MMA betting, you can absolutely slam this card. So let's get to it.
Let's do it. UFC 269, Charles Oliveira versus Dustin the Diamond Poirier is the main event of the evening. This is going to be a lightweight. I mean, what do you even call this? Because it's not a unification. And obviously, you know, that Oliveira has the interim belt. Is it, like, do you call that anything?
No, he beat Chandler for the belt.
That's right. Because yeah. Poirier decided to fight the Conor bet anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Fight Conor instead.
So, official champion.
It was
champion.
Vacant. Oh, yeah, that was the vacant title fight. Was the Chandler bet.
They vacated Chandler. Oliveira went for it. Oliveira won it.
The reason I say that is because it feels like Dustin was the champion.
Yeah, and people still regard him as the champion in the division. So that's why this fight is so important, and it's going to be a banger.
Absolutely, and that's just one of the great fights. We've got the co-main event. We've got Amanda, the Lioness, is back. Amanda Nunes is back fighting what I think is going to be a bit of a cakewalk in Juliana Pena. But we'll get deeper into that. As usual, what we like to do on the show here, just to give everybody a little bit of a preview, we always like to talk a little bit about the prelims, just the fights that we really liked from a betting perspective, and then we'll jump into the main card and talk fight by fight, everything that we like, and give you the best bets we have of the week. We're going to have our flag plant of the evening, our burn dog bet of the week, and the piggy parlay. So let's jump right into it. Let's get into the early prelims. It's not a lot of great names on the early prelims, but there are a few good fights. The first one I wanted to talk about, and I know that's something that you and I, like we talked about, we agreed on a few bets, but this is a women's flyweight bout. We've got Miranda Maverick as a -130 favorite over Erin Blanchfield. This is a battle of, because the women's flyweight division right now is just completely saturated by very young chicks. And this is another one of those cases where two of them are going against each other, which is ironic because you would think that as the UFC, what you'd want to do is brand these chicks so that, you know, you can get them into title fights and build their resumes as they, you know, fight some lower opponents. But they're all fighting each other. I mean, Miranda Maverick just fought Macy Barber. Now, man,
you got Aspen Ladd. You got Meatball Molly. I mean, there's a ton of them, and it's an exciting division to watch grow, you know.
Exactly. And that's what's interesting about this fight is that we've got Blanchfield, who's 22 years old, fighting Maverick, who's under 25 as well. So we've got another case where we've got, you know, two young girls going at it as, you know, to build their resume. Obviously, Miranda Maverick coming off of what everybody thought was a gypped loss against Macy Barber. I watched the fight. I thought Maverick had at least two of the rounds, but it went to a split decision and she ended up losing to Macy Barber. So let's jump right into it. From a betting perspective, fear the Maverick, Miranda Maverick versus cold-blooded Erin Blanchfield. Miranda Maverick 11-3 in her career and Blanchfield 7-1, but only one UFC fight under her belt. So do we like a dirty dog here in Blanchfield to come in and give Maverick a two-game losing streak? I'm just so into the NFL right now, but two-fight losing streak? Or is Miranda Maverick got what it takes to, you know, get off the schneid and give herself a chance to get back into the top 10 in the division?
Yeah, this is one of those when I was talking about the lines being off where I think we're getting about 30 points of value here. I think this fight is sitting at minus 130, minus 135 most places. I see it in my head as a minus 165 to minus 175 favorite on Maverick. So when we see that, we're going to jump value. And again, this is us creating what we think value is. So when you're betting MMA, you know, you're never really going to get all that many pick'ems. You're going to have to choose your juice, and if you do take the juice, which is minus 135 here, we're going to take the juice where we think we're going to find the value. So I'm all over Maverick. She is an all-around great fighter. I mean, we haven't seen her on her back, but Blanchfield really isn't a wrestler, so we shouldn't have that issue. But her stand-up, specifically the Muay Thai clinching game up against the cage, she's a very physical and strong fighter. She has the power to TKO people, which we've already seen in the UFC. I think she had a second-round stoppage or a first-round stoppage of Liana Joja three fights ago. So we've seen that she can put the lights out. Well, not put the lights out, but stop somebody. It was a doctor stoppage. So she can put damage on girls. And in that division, it's very important that you have that edge when you're going against another stand-up striker. So I'm going to go ahead and take the girl with the extra pop in her hands, the overall transitional wrestling game to get girls up against the cage, you know, time against the cage, and really, really – you know, put her will and enact her game plan on other people. As some girls in this division, like Macy Barber, we've seen not be able to follow a game plan and lose because of it. So I think that Maverick has those skills in this specific matchup against a similar type fighter that doesn't have the physicality that she has.
Yeah, so my thoughts here, Blanchfield, 22 years old, obviously very young, but she has fate career professional fights, and five of them have gone to decision. She's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighter. My question to you is, how is this fight going to go?
I think it's going to be Maverick in Muay Thai range most of the fight, controlling striking range, mixing in, you know, transitional from the cage. Strike with an elbow, strike with a knee on the way out, stay away so that she doesn't get pulled to the ground, and again, impose that physicality on a girl who wants to bring her down. And I don't think that Blanchfield has the wrestling chops to do that unless for some reason Maverick went for a takedown and gets caught, you know. But we've seen that Maverick doesn't want to take the fight to the ground, so
yeah. And, you know, I'm on the same bet as well. I'm going to be riding Maverick here. I think a little bit thing that goes under the radar is Maverick's striking game. I know you're talking Muay Thai, so obviously that's, you know, included in that. But I just, a lot of her fights have, you know, haven't gone the distance. I'm actually interested to see, you know, like the over-under on this fight is 2.5, really juiced to the over. I don't think that there's like a realistic knockout opportunity. I think that they're both, you know, between a Muay Thai fighter and a Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist, it should probably be a pretty clean technical fight. I just think Maverick's going to have what it takes to land more significant strikes, have more takedowns, and control the fight and easily take that probably to a decision win. So, I mean, her by decision, just to see what we got there, is plus 120 if you didn't want to lay the juice on minus 130.
Yeah, in this fight, I think Maverick has the striking ability to get a TKO, you know, have her up against the cage, pile punches and ground bunches. Not so much ground and pound, but hold her against the cage. If she gets her hurt, you know, have her curl up and get that ref to step in there. She has the flurry ability, which we've seen in her previous fights, specifically against Jillian Robertson. She was putting punches together, you know, four, five, six punch combos. So
yeah, we know how Jillian Robertson fights, though. Once she's on her back, she's done.
So, you know, she can hold top game. She can put punches together. And she's got the physicality to keep the fight where she wants to fight. So.
All right. Well, that's our first bet of the evening is going to be Miranda Maverick money line over Erin Blanchfield on the undercard. Another fight on the undercard, I think that in terms of, we say undercard, we're talking early prelims right now. Another fight is a middleweight bout. Number 15 ranked Andre Munoz is a -140 favorite over Eric Anders at +120. Obviously, for everybody out there not too familiar with Eric Anders, I believe he was a linebacker in football.
For Alabama, correct.
For Alabama. So we've seen him many times before. He just doesn't have a great chin, which is... But he can take people down. He's got decent wrestling, but he's very aggressive. He just likes to take the front foot forward. Now he's going to be facing an unbelievable wrestler and a submission artist in Andre Munoz.
Yeah, I mean, Munoz has 3 submissions in his last 5 fights in the UFC. 2 were on the Contender Series, but 2 full UFC card submissions, 2 arm bars, which is interesting. And he was able to get the submission on Souza. And specifically, he ran circles around Souza on the ground, which, as we all know, he is one of the best to do it in the octagon when it comes to, MMA, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He was one of the best to attack people on the ground. So for him to just run circles around, even though a long in the tooth Ronaldo Souza, who retired afterwards, it's still... speaks volumes, and we've seen Eric Anders on his back multiple times in the last couple fights, and he's got nothing from there. He's holding on until the end of the round, and I see a submission finish here. I'm not going to take it. I'm taking the juice because I can't. After seeing as many fights as me and you have watched together, specifically with Anders, every time it's the same old story. He just doesn't have the volume, the finishing capability to put it all together. Could that happen? Sure. But against somebody who's got him that much outmatched on the ground, it doesn't look bright. Again, this is another where we're taking a smaller favorite that really should be juiced a lot more. It should be like 2-1 -200.
Yeah, and one of the things I want to bring up, I know I brought up that he doesn't have the greatest chin. A lot of his fights typically go to decision. He has been knocked out twice, but those were against some really high-level competition. One of them was Christoph Jocko. Yeah. The other one, Thiago Santos. I mean, 2 of the top contenders in that type of division. I don't say top contenders, but they're in the top 10.
I mean, Santos fought John Jones for the belt and went 5 rounds with him. Well, two rounds where he didn't have a knee. So that's about as high level as it gets for middling middleweight.
Last 5 years, his career has been the same. He's not really trying to knock anyone out.
Yeah, but still, either way, if you can stand in the ring with John Jones for 5 rounds, then that's saying something. Either way,
I'll say this though, he hasn't been submitted in his MMA career since 2016, never in the UFC.
Yeah,
but is this a chance where that might change? Is Munoz? Let's see what his line is. By submission would be only +140, and he's only a -145 favorite. The book is telling you that he's going to get submitted.
Yeah, I would. If you don't want to eat the juice here, because you don't know Andre Munoz, I understand that. We don't know all too much about Munoz. We just, from what we've seen of him on the ground and what we've seen of Anders on the ground, Anders has nothing off his back. Once he gets there, he's holding on for dear life and hoping for the belt. So
I think there's even a chance that he gets submitted on top.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. So it's really we have enough confidence to bet that. But because Anders has never been submitted, we're just going to eat the juice. That's how we bet. This isn't that much juice when it comes to MMA. -145, it's a good line. It can very well. It's most likely, in my opinion, going to be a by decision, a little bit of a boring fight. But, if you don't want to chase the juice, I highly recommend taking Andre Munoz by submission.
Okay. Well, I'm on the same bet as well. So let's move on to the prelim card in our lone heavyweight bout of the entire evening. Number 11 ranked Augusto Sakai versus Tai Tuivasa. I wish we were doing a video recording. I would totally do a shoey right now just as a good omen for Tai Tuivasa. But unfortunately, I'm wearing... What are these things called? What do you call these things?
House slippers?
Yeah,
moccasins.
I'm basically wearing slippers, so I don't know if that's going to work at the moment. But
I'm literally wearing a brand new pair of shoes for the first time. I will not be doing a shoey out of them. That is for sure. They are white.
So here's my question. They're both -110. This is a straight pick 'em. Are we going to be doing shoeys on Saturday night?
Maybe. Maybe if we put enough money on it.
No, I mean all that to say, what do you like in the fight? Obviously, we're tied to Ivasa homers a bit. You know, we love him.
We have a love hate relationship.
Yeah, with him. Bam Bam, you and I. Oh my god, we've been through it all with this guy.
Yeah, and we still haven't done a shoey, which is kind of shitty on our part. But to be honest, I don't want to drink out of a shoe.
I would do it, but. This last fight was a nice KO over Greg Hardy, and I was arguing with you that I liked Greg Hardy that night. I wasn't doing a shoey, even though that was the most epic shoey night of all time. Yeah. Doing shoeys with hot sauce in it, fucking legend. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I mean, to break this down in the simplest of terms, we have two different style of heavyweight strikers here. We have Tai Tuivasa. He loves to be on his bike. He loves the sideways shuffle because he's got a very long reach. He loves to counter. He's got a very explosive jab, and his hook is deceivingly strong. So we have on the other side, Augusto Sakai, kind of a waiting offensive heavyweight. He likes to be on the front foot. He likes to, you know, wade forward slowly, dodge a punch or two, and then hit you with very rounded strikes, you know, overhand rights, a short left. He wants to bring the fight to Tai, which falls right into what Tai Tuivasa does best. So we have two different style of strikers here, and we have a mismatch because Sakai wants to wade in, Tai wants to wait for those punches and counter with his long reach. So it falls right into what we're looking for, especially with a pick'em. I mean, be warned, it's a heavyweight pick'em, so 50% chance they knock each other out. But we're leaning with Tai here with his reach and the way that he fights striking-wise.
Yeah, so one thing I was thinking about here is I know that there's a lot of close fights on this card, so there's going to be a lot of great parlay opportunities at close odds. So you can get somebody like, let's just say, a Tai Tuivasa at minus 110 parlayed with somebody at really juiced odds that you may like deeper down the cards, such as a Sugar Sean O'Malley at minus 300. You do the two of them together, you're going to be looking at close to even money. I think that he's a live – I don't want to say a live dog. I think he's a great parlay piece. I think this is a fight that if you're going to bet on it, you got to know good and well that this is a 50-50 fight. Anything could happen. I mean, look, Tai Tuivasa, he had a really great knockout over, you know, Greg Hardy. But before that, all he beat was Harry Hunsucker. Everybody out there, try to tell me who that is because you can't. And before that, I mean, the point is he hasn't really beat anybody good. And before that, he was on a losing streak against some pretty good fighters. Like, he got himself into the top 15, looked really good, beating some bad fighters, and then got faced some better competition. I guess I'll do that air quotes. And got some knockouts out of it. Now they're facing him versus the Sakai guy who is in the top 15 as well, has faced some legitimate competition. So let's talk a little bit, you know, just about Augusto Sakai, who he's fought recently, because the guy has fought everybody. He's coming off of a knockout to Jairzinho Rozenstruik, which is also, I think, a downfall, because if you get knocked out by Rozenstruik, it's not that big of a fault because the guy throws hammers, but if you're even allowing him to get those off, you know, we've seen, if you have any type of a full game in UFC, you know what to do with Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Just put him on his back or just, you know, just keep the distance. And then he's also coming off a KO to Alistair Overeem, which makes sense because the stylistic matchup there. But then before that, beats Ivanov, beats Maicon Tarbura by knockout, wins a decision over Andrei Arlovsky. I mean, he had some really nice wins. Even you go back to 2018, a nice win by KO over Chase Sherman, you know, somewhat of a legend. So I don't want to say a legend. I shouldn't.
Chase Sherman's been around.
Yeah, that's where I'm getting at. A veteran.
I mean, I would say they're almost in similar situations, being that they haven't lived up to their hype when they get into the big fights. But I would say Augusto Sakai has a stronger resume with Ivanov, Tybura, Arlovsky, Chase Sherman, compared to Tuivasa. But they're in the same boat. They haven't lived up to their expectations when they get into these big fights. So again, that's why this is a coin flip. And I'm going to take the longer reach. I'm going to take somebody who is going to be fighting a fight that works better for him.
So last question, and we'll close this one out, because I think it is actually one of the bigger fights on the card. I mean, there's so many good fights on the card, but it's a bigger one, at least on the prelims. is the over-under is 1.5. It's juiced to the over, so -150 on the over. My question to you is, how is this fight going to end? Because if we're going to take Tuivasa, I don't necessarily know if you're going to bank on a decision type of win. That's not his recipe for success. But you can get Tuivasa by KO or TKO at +140.
If you're going to bet either fighter, I'd probably take – but I'm. It's a pass on the over.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like,
I think a contrarian bet could be Agusa Sakai by KO at +250. That's a nice contrarian bet.
Absolutely. I mean value for sure because really they should both be
– in knockout territory.
Yeah. Well, they should both be in knockout territory, but the knockout – They both are heavyweight knockout artists, so the line should be the same for both of them, considering it's a pick 'em to win by knockout. So for me, if you're gonna bet knockout, then yeah, go the other way and be a contrarian. But for one of the few pick 'ems on the card, I just don't think it's necessary.
Sure, and we've seen Tuivasa go the distance. It's not like it's absolutely out of control. Same with Sakai. I mean, just the stylistic matchup between the two is actually very similar, which means that it could end up being, I don't want to say boring, but it could be a slow fight.
Derek Lewis, Francis Ngannou-esque.
Yeah, exactly. Feeling each other out the whole time. So I like Tuivasa to win. I think it's a 50-50 draw here. And if I was going to, you know, try to get some juice here, not, I mean, it's not like you're laying much on -110, but if you wanted to get a little bit more value out of it, Sakai by KRTKO is a live dog in that situation. Let's keep it moving on the prelims to what is the most underrated fight of the entire evening, a bantamweight bout between number 8 ranked Pedro Munhoz, who is a slight favorite over number 9 ranked Dominic Cruz. Dominic Cruz, an obvious legend, you know, previous champ, guy has been around the block. And yet he's still an underdog over Munhoz. What's interesting about this fight more than anything is we know that Munhoz has the knockout power. That's like kind of his game plan, is to use that big right hand and really get those right hooks to come in. But Dominic Cruz is a points artist, and he's going to keep his distance. He's going to have his left hand up to cover those shots, and he's going to use those. He's going to get leg kicks galore. He's going to go for that and try to utilize that jab and try to beat you with volume. That being said, over-under is looking like, let's just double-check it here, it's super juiced to the over of 2.5. So Vegas is telling you this is going the distance. If it goes the distance, doesn't Cruz have the better opportunity with a little bit better cardio than Munhoz?
Absolutely. I love that bet here, which me and you came to the consensus together before the pod that we love Don McCruz by decision.
We like him to win by decision.
We like him to win by decision, but we're betting something else, something we harp on the podcast at all times, is find the value of the bet if you like a fighter by decision. If you like a fighter by decision, you go to your parlay, you take that fighter in the over, and you see which odds are better. Here, we're getting, what was it, +140, +150 on Cruz by decision?
Yeah, Cruz by decision.
I believe it was +150.
Sorry, just give me a sec. But yeah. 150, correct.
Yes, +150. So what
I was like, and I said to you, I was like, ooh, Cruz by decision, +150. The over-under is -235. There's no way that if you get a -110, you know, pick 'em parlayed with a -235 over, that it's possibly going to be better than +150. But I was wrong.
It always works that way, and that's why we implore, we tell you every podcast the same thing, because here's a great example. What did I do? I went straight to my parlay. I put Dominic Cruz in the over in, and what did it come out to? +176.
Now, here's why that it's important for everybody out there who's trying to, you know, look through the bets and make the best possible decisions they can, is the over is 2.5. That means that the fight has to go over the 2-minute and 30-second mark of the third round. Now, if we get that, the parlay of that, versus taking him by decision, that means that we're losing 2 minutes and 30 seconds of the third round if we do it just by decision, because it has to go the full distance. Meanwhile, if we just parlay the over, we don't necessarily have to worry. We get in hand 2 minutes and 30 seconds, and we get better juice.
Exactly. So if you see a late round knockout or a freak submission, then we still
injury,
hit.
Anything could happen.
Yeah, anything can happen. Doctor stoppage. Let's say there's a minute left and a cut opens up and it's just leaking and they stop the fight. Well, guess what? We still won because we had that extra 2 minutes and 30 seconds, the back half of the third round. So you get a better line and you get a half a round of cushion, per se.
Yeah, I kept saying 2 minutes, 30 seconds. Half a round sounds a lot easier for everybody out there. But yeah. No, I think that that's the best handicap you could possibly have on this is if you like Cruz, then that's the bet, is take him in the over parlay.
I'll tell you why I like Cruz real quick, and it's what we saw in the Jose Aldo fight against Pedro Munhoz. Jose Aldo just absolutely outpointed him. He fought a better striking matchup. He's longer. He was longer than Pedro Munhoz, who is a very short and stocky guy. He's a big puncher. He lunges into things, and Aldo just sat back, kicked, punched, and just outpointed him, countered him every time he would try to step in, fought behind a jab, things that Dominic Cruz excels at. But what Dominic Cruz was always known for is being the smartest fighter in the ring, which means he's looking at that Jose Aldo tape and being like, damn, well, I can do this. I'm better at Jose Aldo than this. I'm the point artist, you know what I mean? So I think Dominic Cruz is going to go out there. He's going to keep his distance. He's going to avoid the big heavy punches of Munhoz while fighting behind a jab in those deadly leg kicks and honestly the
body kicks.
The body kicks, exactly. Took the words right out of my mouth. For Cruz are really going to hinder Munhoz, as we saw in the Aldo fight.
Absolutely. I love it. We're on the same side there, so we're going to take Dominic Cruz parlayed with the over of 2.5 here. Let's move on to the last fight of the prelim card. Number 7 ranked Josh Emmett in a featherweight bout versus number 9 ranked Dan Ige. This is an interesting fight. Ige coming off a main event fight over the Korean Zombie, and he loses that by unanimous decision. Josh Emmett, meanwhile, obviously, you know, he's been around for a little bit of time, and he's coming off a nice win over Shane Burgos. And we thought that, you know, in that case, he was like kind of a live dog in the situation. And one fight of the night honors, wins by unanimous decision. My concern with Emmett right off the bat is that he hasn't fought the same level of competition that Ige's fought. That goes without saying. I mean, Korean Zombie, Calvin Kattar, Edson Barbosa, these are some of the fights in Ige's arsenal.
Yeah.
I just think that I know, well, just right off the bat, I'm pretty positive. I'm just going to click into it just to make sure I don't sound like an idiot. But I was going to say a little bit of reach or a little bit of height. Actually, now that I look at it, it's pretty fair. I mean, you're looking at two guys that are 5'6", 5'7", 145, both have the same reach, both have the same leg reach. This is about as good of a stylistic matchup as you can have.
Yeah, I mean, Ige really won me over in that Barbosa fight. I mean, it's pretty tough to outpoint Edson Barbosa, and it was a back-and-forth fight, but he did it. He came out, he weathered the storm from Barbosa, and then won in the later rounds, which is what I expect from this fight. I mean, this is going to be the burn dog of the week for me here at plus 145. And honestly, he was beating Calvin Kattar early in that fight. I thought he was winning the first couple rounds. Calvin Kattar started putting punches together and just absolutely battered Ige towards the end of the fight. But then you see him come out and win in spectacular fashion with Gavin Tucker in a 22-second knockout. And, like, not a lot of people know Gavin Tucker, but Gavin Tucker was a young lion, a Sean Brady type of guy who was just running through the lower ranks of the division and then ran into a buzzsaw against Dan Ige and showed that Dan Ige has the knockout power to put somebody to sleep early in fights. So I think that's why Emmett is favored in this, is because he's a big KO guy. But we've seen that Dan Ige can do that too. And we've seen him go to war with Kattar and Korean Zombie and, you know, stand his ground and really push those guys all 25 minutes. So I don't think Josh Emmett has ever fought a 5-round fight. No, he's never fought a 5-round fight in the UFC. So if it gets to 4 and 5, who's going to have the advantage? The guy that's been in 4 and 5 with two absolute killers in Calvin Kattar and Korean Zombie. So I think that's why I like him, but it just came to my mind that it's not a 5-round fight.
I was gonna interrupt, but I wanted to see if you were gonna recognize it on your own. Yeah, yeah, it's the last fight on the prelims, yeah, exactly. But it's not the main event. Yeah,
exactly. So scratch that, but I mean that'll just give him more cardio as the fight gets into the third round. So I'm gonna stick with my dog here. It's a dog play. It's plus 145, plus 150 some places. I think that steam has already moved.
Either way, from what you're saying, is that if you're just going to go the cardio route, I mean, the over-under is 2.5 and it's juiced to minus 195 on the over. They're expecting this to go to distance. If you got the better cardio in Ige that you think, those late rounds are still going to matter, especially against a knockout artist.
Yeah.
Who's going to be throwing more volume, more volume punches, more heavier punches.
Yeah. And people forget that Josh Emmett got his forehead caved in by Jeremy Stephens from an illegal knee and had to get surgery. That's why his win against Shane Burt, against Michael Johnson when he came back was like so phenomenal. And he's been on a three fight winning streak against some pretty good fighters. So you got to be wary of this guy. He's a good fighter. And there's a reason he's favored, but I like the cardio and the overall better scorecard for Ige in terms of who he's fought.
Let me ask you this. Dan Ige in his MMA career has 2 rear naked choke submissions, both in the UFC. And he only has about 8 fights in the UFC, so that's fairly impressive from a guy that you don't think of as having great, you know, wrestling necessarily or even BJJ. Is there an opportunity for a submission here? Because that's where you might get some value on the card. Submission is plus 1,100.
I don't think so.
You can leave it there.
Yeah, no, I'll give you. Emmett has never been submitted in the UFC, and there's a reason. He's got a neck like fucking Dan Henderson. There's no.
Like Mike Lennon?
Yeah, like. The traps connect to the ears. Yeah. You know what I mean?
His head is attached to his shoulders.
Yeah, exactly. He's just a thick muscle horse, muscle hamster. And he's one of those guys that when he hits the deck, he pops right to a knee immediately. You know, he wrestled, I believe, in college as well. But he's got good wrestling chops on him. There's a reason, you know, you don't see him on his back too often against fighters. And it's because nobody wants to try and take him down. Because they're just going to waste their energy.
So. Yeah, so just for everybody out there, as usual, you know, we always like to – we give you what we like as our bet that we're going to take, but I also like to give everybody out there, you know, other options if you are out there searching and you want to try to take a little bit of a juicier play. Dan Ige by decision, plus 275. I mean, I know he's only plus 140, but that is his lowest odds in terms of a path to victory by KO or by submission. Yeah. Both are super juiced. They think that – if he's going to win, it's going to be by a decision. So if you wanted to go that route, you could do that. You could also parlay him in the over, which is probably going to have better odds. I didn't even look at it. But I mean, Josh Emmett's easiest way to victory, I mean, they got him at plus 250 to win by KO or TKO and plus 150 to win by decision. So with the over-under being minus 195 on 2.5, basically Vegas saying to everyone it's going to go by decision, I think that if you're going to take a decision bet, Dan Ige is your best bet. If not, just go ahead and take Dan Ige outright. And like I said, he's had 2 submission wins, and he also has some KO power, you know, with some elbows. And we've seen Emmett has been knocked out by some elbows in his career. So there's a lot of opportunities there. But that's our bet for that fight, and that wraps up the prelims. It's time to get into the main card.
One thing real quick to show you both sides of our technique of parlaying the over-under. You only get plus 250 with over 2.5 parlayed with Dan Ige. So again, if you
exactly, think, you gotta do the math every single time.
You gotta do
this is 275. That's crazy.
You gotta do the math.
But do you want that half a round? So you have to make those decisions.
I usually, unless there's a 50-point difference, like a plus 50, I will usually take the half round.
Me too. I would rather the 250 and eat the 25 cents than
have
to pray that it goes to decision. And then, on top of the decision, the other thing you have to worry about is the judges.
Bad judging, yeah. Yep. So, just to show you guys that it will vary, and we say err on the side of caution and take the half, unless it's a fighter that you know really doesn't have any knockout power.
Right.
Then you're just wasting, you know, it's not.
Yeah, these are like situations similar to if, NFL, for example, for everybody out there. It's like, do you want to buy the hook?
Yeah.
Do you want to tease?
Yeah.
In certain situations, you just have to honestly crunch numbers and figure out what you like and is the juice worth the squeeze?
And if Ige didn't have a couple knockouts, we would be taking by decision. You know what I mean? But he does. He's shown his power, so you have to respect that.
And we've seen Emmett get knocked out.
Exactly. So if you don't have those two signs, if you got a guy that's never been knocked out, got a chin like a an anvil, and you're fighting a point, and you got Dominic Cruz on the other side, you know, you're taken by decision. So
I don't see a knockout coming there, but what I do see is a knockout coming in the first fight of the main card. We've got a bantamweight bout with Sugar Sean O'Malley, still not ranked, which is insane to me, but that's what happens when your last fight is over a what you would call like the 16th man on a roster, basically a G League player.
Yeah, when it comes to the NBA. Guy.
Yeah, Moutinho, baby, who I love, though. I love him. He came out firing. But against number 15 ranked Raulian Paiva. Right now, we got Sean O'Malley as about a minus 300 favorite. So this is super juiced to O'Malley. Look, at the end of the day, I'm just going to call a spade here. I don't think Paiva is someone to overlook. I think Sean O'Malley, the reason he gets juiced so much is because Vegas knows that he is a draw and he's a big name. And the sharp money, I don't want to say the, sorry, the public money comes in on Sean O'Malley. I am not going to touch this fight because I love Sean O'Malley and I think that he does have the striking, because that's what Raulian Paiva does. He's a striker, and I think they're just going to strike, and that's the last thing you want to do is strike with Sean O'Malley. I mean, he's just so good. But problem with Sean O'Malley to me is we've seen, you know, against Chito Vera, you know, he does have some injury history there mid-fight. That's always a possibility. Yeah. We saw with Moutinho when someone comes at him first and he's not the aggressor, he dominated that fight. The strikes, he had three times.
He gassed himself from trying to knock him out. Not in a blowing his load in one flurry. Like, he just beat him up for two and a half rounds, and then he gassed. You know.
But I don't think Paiva is going to have the same game plan whatsoever as Moutinho. No. He's not going to be trying that. He's going to be a little bit more technical. And look, at the end of the day, O'Malley really hasn't fought anybody. It's just the fact of the matter. He's a big name because he has some cool knockouts and he's just like entertaining and whatnot. Yeah. But he hasn't beat anybody. Raulian Paiva has, and he's actually a pretty good fighter.
Yeah, and he, watch out for this guy.
I think he's a live dog here.
He's a live dog, sure. This is pass.
Yeah.
And just enjoy the fight.
This
is dogger pass, but honestly, less than that. The reason half of you that are listening to this bet on these fights is for entertainment. We don't need the entertainment here. The entertainment is there. Yes. Sean O'Malley is there.
Exactly.
You know, don't waste your money and throw it away on something. You know, if you put a gun to my head, I'd bet Sean O'Malley by KO. Or
you can get that at plus 110. That's really not a bad bet.
And you can get him under 2.5 round. Him and under 2.5 rounds at plus 140. So parlayed. So
there
gun to my head. I'm parlaying him with the under 2.5 rounds. I can't believe it's 2.5 rounds, but I love that. You know, the fact that you can get it.
I think
honestly,
it's because of the last fight with Moutinho. It kind of just showed that. He can't just knock people out on cue. Like, he's fighting a real fighter. This guy is actually ranked. Honestly, he's fighting someone better than him rank-wise.
Yeah. I would say the under 2.5 has some value there, you know.
Yeah, definitely the value play.
Paiva's got some pop in his hand. He's not a knockout artist, but anybody can be clipped, especially when you're trying to knock somebody out. So
at minus 125, I love that. I think that the issue, though, is O'Malley has unbelievable stamina. He really does.
Yeah.
Even in that Chito Vera fight, the guy's on one foot and he's kind of keeping it a fight for a little while until he couldn't get up off his back. And, you know, that just went the way it was. I mean, the only reason I keep bringing it up is because it's his only loss that we've seen. Mm-hmm. So those are the only things I could dissect a potential loss from.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I mean, Raulian Paiva, like, look at – I know he's coming off of a really nice win. He just beat Kyler Phillips, which was a really interesting fight. Kyler Phillips had been 9-1 in his career, and then he before that, just to get through it, he's on a 3-fight win streak in the UFC. That's impressive, and he's done it. But the way he's done it, I mean, he's got 2 decision wins, and then he's got a late second round KO. So that's probably why the under isn't as enticing. Yeah. But I mean, look at who he's fought. He hasn't fought a Sean O'Malley, so there's a good chance that if I'm going to take anything, I like the under in that. I think that's a decent opportunity there, and especially because we know that Paiva has knockout power.
Yeah.
Knocked out Mark De La Rosa in the second round. I mean, that's not, you know, That's nothing to look over, but whatever. Not much to talk about here. This is a dog or pass for me. Like you said, this is an entertainment bet or entertainment fight. No reason to entertainment bet at the same time if I don't need to. It's just wasting money.
Shout out to the dog or pass guys, Saftik. Yeah. You the man. I think I'm going to be on the opposite side of you on this next one.
Okay, so let's get right into it. It's a flyweight bout. Number 6 ranked Kai Kara France is a +115 dog to number 7 ranked Cody Garbrandt, making his flyweight debut. Jumping down from bantamweight, finally going to drop 10 pounds, get to the 125 mark. See, I'm learning. I'm getting better with my weights, all right?
Got it. Better. You're getting better.
You know,
you're
doing a little research these days. But
don't jinx yourself.
I know.
You're almost there.
I'm only three eventually. More fights. It's all right. I already blew it in the first 5 minutes when I was wondering what type of fight this lightweight main event was. Yeah. Just because I got confused because it seems like Poirier was the champion.
And you called Chase Sherman a legend.
Well, and then I did correct myself.
Yeah,
I did
you did. You
got it. I just said I meant to say he was a veteran. Like, he's been around for a while.
Yeah.
So anyways, okay. Since let's Cody Garbrandt is a favorite, making his flyweight debut. The big question mark going into this was, is he going to make weight with ease?
I mean, I'm not too worried about him making weight, honestly, because he's kind of a small bantamweight. A little bit, you know what I mean? Like he's got a small frame that he fills out with muscle.
It would make sense with how bad his chin is.
Yeah. I mean, and you kind of seen him deal with power issues at 135 in terms of him getting knocked out by 135ers, not his power, because we know he has power. But I'm going to let you cap this first, because I think I'm going to be on the other side.
All right. So, you know me. I'm a big No Love fan. I love Cody Garbrandt, but he fucks me every fucking time. He's just like, it's the same thing with Tuivasa. Like, I've got a love-hate relationship with him. So I loved him back in the TJ Dillashaw days. I thought that Dillashaw was just annoying. I liked the way that he talked shit, Cody. That's what kind of got me into him. And then coming out and getting knocked out 2 times certainly didn't help his brand whatsoever. And, you know, now he's moving down a weight class. It kind of changes everything. So, I mean, I was looking a little bit into it. I mean, he's coming off of a fight versus Rob Font. You know, loses by decision in a 5-round fight as a main event just back in May. But Rob Font is nasty. I mean, you can't take away from how good Rob Font is as a top-3 contender in the bantamweight division. One of the best divisions in all of UFC, just because he just lost this last weekend to one of the biggest legends bantamweights has ever had, Jose Aldo. But outside of that, here's the way I look at it. Cody Garbrandt. Let's look at his wins in the last 5 years. I mean, 2021, he hasn't had a win. He's 0-1. 2020, he has the insane knockout over Rafael Asuncio at the end of the second round with literally a second to spare. And just, I think it was Asuncio just making a terrible mistake by leaving his hands down while in front of him on the cage. That's like literally no-no number one. Before that, loses by KO TKO to Pedro Munhoz. Great striker, similar to Rafael Asuncio, but in this case, in the first round, the guy has no chin. Then he loses to TJ Dillashaw in 2018, loses again to TJ Dillashaw in 2017, and then you can even go all the way back to 2016, but, you know, that's when he was in his prime, and has wins over guys like Dominic Cruz and Thomas Almeida. But is he the same fighter that he was in 2016? I don't think so. So my thoughts here, he's moving down a weight class. I think that his stamina will be just fine. I don't think cutting 10 pounds is going to be an issue for him. You're going to be surprised here. I know you thought we were going to go against each other here, but this is a pass for me. I don't have any interest in this. I don't have enough arsenal on Kai Kara France. He only has a few fights in the UFC, and through that, he hasn't really fought anybody good. But I don't think that – and he's a striker with a lot of power from what we've seen, and I don't think that Cody has the chin for it at the end of the day. So to me, this is a pass. If I was going to take anything, to be honest, I think I'd kind of lean to the under of 2.5 here.
Yeah, I mean, I am team fade, no love.
Yeah, I know you are.
I'm team fade.
I knew
fade,
what you were
going
to do
no
here.
Love.
You thought I was going to take Cody, though.
Yeah.
But I've learned. I'm learning.
You're going to learn today, boy. Yeah, I'm fading team no love because, honestly, Kai Kara France coming from City Kickboxing, the Kiwi Islanders out there with Sal Bender, Dan Hooker, Brad Riddell just fought. You got the 145 champion, Volko. You got Volkanovski. I just think that he is around killers. And he's a young, up-and-coming fighter. He showed some real promise in a lot of fights. He's got a win over Raulian Paiva, a win over Mark De La Rosa. Then he loses in a decision to Brandon Moreno, comes back, beats Tyson Nam in a decision, loses due to Brandon Royval, another young lion in this division. Brandon Royval is going to fight. Is going to end up fighting Brandon Moreno for the belt.
Well, watch. He did. He did.
He got
submitted in the first round.
Roval?
I'm pretty sure. I remember watching it at your house.
Yeah, he did. I don't think that was for the belt.
No, it wasn't for the belt.
No, that was Brandon Moreno's first fight after.
He TKO'd him. No, he beat Kai Kara France and then...
He did beat Kai Kara France.
And then he lost to Brandon Moreno by KO.
Yeah, but I don't think that was for...
No, it wasn't for the belt. It was for the number one contender spot to fight
Figueiredo.
And then he did that. And then I remember, because we watched at your house, right after the fight, they bring Moreno into the interview room. And immediately, literally within... this is the first time I've ever seen this. 15 minutes after the fight, there was already an agreement for Figueiredo and Moreno to fight for the belt. Exactly. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, that was crazy. And they did the same thing after this second fight.
Yeah.
After the first fight. Yeah. Like, he calls him out. He goes, I want to do this again. That was a great fight. Like, he wasn't a sore loser about it. He was like, I lost. I didn't perform today. Things didn't go my way. I want another fight. That was awesome. Moreno, I hope you guys loved it.
Just gave it to him.
Yeah,
right,
and Moreno immediately goes,
Moreno is the most generous and, like, luckiest guy of all time. Yeah. Just making things happen quick because, you know, it's a quick paycheck.
But... So he loses because Royval jumps guillotine late in the second round on him. And then he wins by KO in his most recent fight in March 21 against Rodrigo Bonatoren, which is probably his lowest caliber fight since he got into the UFC, in my opinion. So I think this guy just has, you know, lights out power. And I think he's evolving in a higher caliber of camp than Cody is in Sacramento with Team Alpha, with Alpha Male, which is a great camp. But I think Cody may have left and gone somewhere else.
I know wherever he's at, he's like he's in like a biking group. I just see him on Instagram. He does a lot of cardio.
Yeah,
that's all I got for
him. He's changed it up, but I just think that the City Kickboxing, whether they win or lose, they get better in every fight.
Nah, he's still in Team Alpha Male.
No, yeah, I know, but
he's also part of Mark Henry MMA.
There we go. So he went to Mark Henry. He went to Mark Henry to switch up his camps, which he finishes his camp with Mark Henry now. Which Mark Henry is known as the striking god of, like, he's up there with Dillashaw's coach. Come on, what's his fucking name? Trevor Whitman.
Trevor Whitman.
Him, Mark Henry, and Greg Jackson are like three of the most legendary striking. Greg Jackson's a little more wrestling, but so Mark Henry and Trevor Whitman are known as gurus, you know what I mean, when it comes to striking. So I expect this to be a very high-level fight. I just think that No Love seems to fade in fights, and Kai Kara France is a little engine, the little engine that could. Like, he ramps up as fights go. And I love the competition that he fights with. I love this as a dog, and I'm actually throwing it into a parlay, not taking it straight up, although I probably will come game day. You know, come game time, I'm probably going to have him straight up as well, but I'm throwing it into a three-leg parlay with the over in the Juliana Pena-Amanda Nunes fight. And
that is a ballsy over.
And Dustin Poirier to give myself the Charles Oliveira hedge.
We'll get there later.
I'm just saying, we're going to talk about it. I'm saying that's what this parlay is.
We've talked about this on previous pods. I understand what you're doing. So.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll talk about what the hedge is with Charles Oliveira when it comes to that fight. But I'm taking a three-leg parlay, minus 160 Dustin, minus 135 over 1.5 with Nunes Pena and Kai Kara France plus 115. That gives me 5-1 odds on that parlay for a three legger, and it gives me an opportunity to hedge with a dog in the main event. So I love this bet.
So what you're saying is you have no love for Cody Garber?
No love, brother. Ba-dum-tsh.
Love it. Yeah, like I said, I lean under 2.5 at minus 135, and that's a potential parlay piece for moi. Let's get to the co-main events of the evening. I'm really excited. Psych. Not really. I mean, we got a women's bantamweight title bout. Amanda the Leoness Nunez versus Juliana Pena. We've got the champ versus the number three ranked contender in the division. Amanda Nunez appears to be inhumane, immortal. And Juliana Pena decides.
We got one more fight on the main event, dude.
Oh, wow. I skipped right over it.
I'm going to say this one for you. Santiago Pazanibio.
Yeah, thank you. You did me a favor. You did me a favor there because I wasn't pronouncing that.
But let's just call him Ponzi.
He's Ponzi scheme?
He's the Ponzi scheme for beating my boy Miguel Baeza. That was a tough one to watch. But
okay, he's so a good fighter. I'll recap it. We got a welterweight bout. You're right. I skipped right over it. It's the number 12 ranked Jeff Neal is a slight underdog versus number 14 ranked Santi Ponzi scheme. So a welterweight bout. The reason I skipped it probably was because I was looking at my own notes and I have nothing on this because I've got no interest in this fight whatsoever. Like you mentioned, well, first of all, Ponzinibbio he's been around for a long time. Took 3 years off of fighting in the UFC, decided to come back, comes back in his last fight and wins in a very tough fight versus Miguel Baeza, who's a hometown favorite for us down here in South Florida. Meanwhile, he's fighting Jeff Neal on a two-fight losing streak and also just had a potential DUI with a firearm in his car. Like, the guy's obviously, and it was during fight week, like when this all came to fruition, never looks good for a guy like that. But what we do know about Jeff Neal, he's got the hammer fist. He's got that big right hand that could knock you out. But he has always had an issue with being aggressive and with volume. And he typically sits and waits, and that's just not what you can do in a welterweight bout. I think Santiago Ponzinibbio, if I'm just going to call it how I see it, is going to lay the volume and is just going to try to win on volume. And the only path to success for Neal here is to knock him out. Aside from that, just count me out on this fight altogether. But what do you think?
I think this is going to be the barn burner of the night, dude. Both of these are strikers, dude. They just come forward and strike. Ponzi scheme is a wild child when it comes to fighting.
I don't think it's a bad fight. Yeah. I just don't want to bet it.
Oh yeah, I mean, I like Ponzi scheme here because
that's his new name.
Yeah, Ponzi scheme. And I like it simply because his opponent got a DUI and a weapons charge 9 days ago. You know what I mean? 9 days before the fight.
Yeah, something's not right there mentally, you know?
That is like prime camp time. So you go through a life-altering event when you're supposed to be, you know, ramping up camp. And it's just – the line is too low here for me to avoid that variable in this fight. Only you're taking a minus 132 favorite against a guy who is, you know, already a favorite before everything that happened. I do like the over here as a potential play at minus 155. Both guys have shown heavy chins. I mean, I don't remember the last time Jeff Neal was fucking KO'd. Decision, TKO, TKO, decision, TKO. And those were wins by TKO, KO from him against Mike Perry and Nico Price. So, you know, those aren't very heavy chin dudes. But I like the over here, and I like Ponzi scheme. So I might take him with the over. We'll see. I might just take the over, but I do like this as a good betting spot with the small favorites of the over and Ponzi, our boy.
Yeah, and what's interesting about this fight is that it's basically a pick 'em, but you got Ponzi scheme as a plus 215 to win by KO, and you've also got Neal to win by KO at plus 175, which are pretty low odds for a pick 'em. You would think that those would be a little bit higher, especially with an over under, you know, at 2.5. It's at 1.5, but it's super juiced to the over at minus 155. Yeah, like I said, I got nothing on this from a betting perspective. If I was going to bet, if I'm a betting man, which of course I am, and God knows, you know me, you know I'll be betting on this the night of. But
in every single bet,
yeah,
every
I'm
single
bet
fight.
I'll bet every single fight because that's what I do, which is, you know, it works for me. I'll tell you what.
Yeah. I think we can leave it there. I'm leaning more towards the over than Ponzi, but I like both of them.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the co-main event of the evening. Already introduced it. We got Amanda Nunes versus Juliana Pena, which she's minus 1,000, plus 160. The main thing that you can take away from this is coming into the fight, Juliana Pena has been talking shit. Obviously, Nunes, they were supposed to fight at, I believe, October or August, something like that, and Nunez had COVID and couldn't fight. It was a COVID? I'm pretty sure it was COVID. It was either that or an injury, but I'm pretty sure it was COVID.
I think it was COVID.
Yeah. Anyways, Nunez just can't be beaten. She's minus 1,000. I really don't understand how you could bet this. The problem with it is, like, Nunez, you could say, like, oh, she's a knockout artist. Oh, she's a TKO, like, or she's a submission artist. Like, she just is a jack of all trades. She can beat you in any way. She can beat you by decision. We've seen that in five-round fights also as the champ. There's just no way to bet a prop on her, in my opinion. Like, you could take a flyer on trying to get a submission at plus 400, which isn't a bad bet if you want to, you know, get some juice out of it, or plus 400 by decision, but it's a five-round fight. The thing is, and you'll probably touch on this shortly, is Juliana Pena is a wrestler. So if I'm going to take anything, hoping it somehow goes to the ground, but I don't see Nunez is get taken down. So the best thing that Juliana Pena does is get on top of people, ground and pound, and use her wrestling game. You're not going to do that to Nunez. So I don't really see a path to success here for Pena. I don't like anything in this bet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking the over because I think there's going to be a lot of stalling from Pena. I think she knows she's outmatched on the feet. There's going to be a lot of holding against the cage, trying to wear on Amanda, trying to get to later areas of the fight. So I just think that the first round is going to be
telltale. Like, it's going to tell all.
Yeah. We'll see. You know, Amanda could come out and knock her out. We already know she doesn't like her. And she's talking shit, which is rare for Amanda.
Yeah.
Like, Amanda's actually talking shit, which means Pena could be in her head a little bit. But either way, I think the first round's going to be a stalling fest from Pena, trying to feel it out and trying to get past that first round. So I think the early second is where I'm going to be sweating the most, because that's usually when Amanda comes out and just fucking puts it on. But it's odd here. In Amanda's last, you know, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 fights. It goes first round finish, five round decision, first round finish, five round decision. So actually one of those against Raquel Pennington was fifth round finish. But either way, it either goes five rounds or it's in the first round. So it's a coin flip.
Here's what I would advise people, since she's a minus 1,000 favorite. Here's what I like. If I'm going to bet anything, and this is just something to throw, you know, like a little baby, you know, sprinkle on, as we like to say, is you take Nunez by a round. So let's just say that she wins in round three. You can get that at plus 450. Round four, plus 750. I mean, those are something that you can look at as a chance to get some real value out of Nunez finishing at a specific time of the fight. That's just one way to get juice out of her winning, but not taking that with a specific way of finishing, because I don't ever trust Nunez to finish in a specific way. She's shown that she can do it all. So I kind of like round three, round four. I think round four at plus 750 is an interesting bet, actually. I think that's one way I could attack it.
Well, one thing we do know about Juliana Pena is she's a very tough girl. You know, she fights hard. She weathers through the storm, and she, you know, tries to use her cardio and her wrestling to put herself in advantageous situations. So I'm betting on her toughness here, and not in the fact that she's not going to get finished or she's not going to get knocked out or submitted. It's just the fact that she's going to be able to make it through a round and a half with Amanda Nunes.
Yep. All right, well, that covers that. Let's move to the main event of the evening. It's time! Lightweight title bout. The reigning champion, Charles Oliveira, versus the number one ranked opponent in Dustin the Diamond Poirier. DuBronx, your current champion, is a plus 135, plus 140 dog. And you got the Diamond Poirier at minus 160. I think we alluded to this earlier in the podcast that you and I might be at a disagreement here.
Yeah, I am sticking by my boy, the Diamond Poirier. He has not failed me, although I did not bet him against Khabib, that's for sure. You're retarded if you're betting against Khabib, just like you're retarded if you're betting against Islam Makhachev. But I can't lose faith here. You know, you're a homer sometimes. I'm honestly not that big of a homer when it comes to to like certain fighters when the betting lines are against them. But this is one that I'm going to stick by, and I'm going to take Dustin Poirier here at the minus 160, which we talked about in the parlay. So whether my parlay comes to fruition, I'm still going to be taking Dustin Poirier. Just, you know, they're both such high caliber fighters that I just think I'm betting on the tougher man who's been to more five-round wars. You know, we haven't seen any wars with Du Bronx. We've seen him just absolutely manhandle and finish dudes, which he is not going to be able to do. He might finish Dustin Poirier, sure, but he's not going to come in and manhandle and run circles around him like he's done to, you know, Tony Ferguson, Kevin Lee, you know. But once you get past Michael Chandler and Tony Ferguson and you look at his record, you're like, okay, Kevin Lee, Jared Gordon, Nick Lenz, David Tamer, Jim Miller, Clay Guida, Christos Galigo. He lost to Paul Felder. He lost to Pettis early. He lost to Max Holloway. Those are real early on in his career. But when you look at the later career, like, you don't see high level long battles, and that's what Dustin Poirier does. He drags you into deep water, and he says, I'm tougher than you. I have better cardio than you, and let's go. Let's fight. And I think that Dustin's track record has shown that he can weather those storms better than Oliveira.
So I've got a lot to I don't want to say digest, a lot that I would like to explain about this in terms of my mentality here. Let's just talk about this right out of the gate, is Dustin Poirier, his last two fights, he decided instead of chasing the belt, he was going to fight Conor McGregor for a second time, avoids going for the vacant belt and fighting Chandler or Du Bronx, and decides that he's going to go fight McGregor for a second time. Now, look, he's coming off of two straight KO wins over or TKO wins over Conor McGregor. But before that, his only previous win was over Dan Hooker, who, as we've seen, you know, is just not in the best – he's not in his prime.
What do you mean only previous win?
I'll get there. But I'm saying in terms of recency. So that goes back to 2020, in June of 2020. The fight before that, he fights Khabib Nurmagomedov, gets submitted very early in the fight. That's in 2019. Before that, his only other win was against Max Holloway in 2019, who obviously was fighting out of his weight class. So
What do you mean only other win, dude? I'm looking
hold
at...
Hold on. No. Obviously, he's got fights before that. What I'm trying to say is it's been 2 years since he's... Look, here's what I'm trying to get at. Is Conor McGregor, we don't even know how good he is. Look, in the last 5 years of his career, I think it's maybe 4 years, he has one win. It was one win, and it was against Cowboy Cerrone, who is completely out of his prime. That's his only win, Conor McGregor. Yeah. We don't know what level of competition. Like, we don't even know if Conor McGregor is good anymore. We don't know that. I love Conor, and this is coming from me, the biggest Conor homer there is. Point is, he decided to go that route. All I'm getting at here is that I don't know what technical in the last few years, you know, in his last three or four fights in the last 3 years or so, who he's fought that makes him such a heavy favorite over the current champion. Now you're going to talk about Charles Oliveira, who's on a 9-fight win streak, has the most win or most finishes in UFC history, which is that goes a long way. Granted, here's the thing. Who's he beaten? He's beaten Michael Chandler and Tony Ferguson. Aside from that, I don't know what else you could...
A weathered, shriveled version of Tony Ferguson.
Right. And then you could say Kevin Lee, not a great fighter
cut
in the division.
Cut from the UFC last month.
Nick Lentz.
Yeah.
I mean, look, he's on a 9-fight win streak, but they're not versus the greatest competition in the world.
Yeah.
I think that what I'm really getting at here is that Du Bronx, as a guy who could finish anybody at any single time in a fight... Fighting a guy like Dustin Poirier, who, first of all, that's the other thing I want to talk about, is, look, let's talk about the style that he's going to fight with. Who, go look who Dustin Poirier has fought since, let's go all the way back to maybe 2016.
You got to go back to the Gaethje.
Before that. Who's he fought back to 2016 that has ever had the BJJ and potential takedown and submission game that Oliveira has? He hasn't. He's fought Conor McGregor, fighter.
Yeah.
Hooker, a striker.
Yeah.
His one fighter that he fought that actually does have that is Khabib, who submitted him.
Yeah.
Before that, Max Holloway, Eddie Alvarez, Gaethje, yeah. Pettis. All of these guys are the same type of fighters.
How many guys got up versus Khabib?
No, nobody. I don't
care. Dustin Poirier did twice.
Okay, that's not the point. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying
so if he
that.
Can,
I'm not saying DuBronx is going to submit him. I'm just saying that he's actually fighting a different style of fighter that he's fought hasn't fought in 5 years. And the one time he did, he lost by submission. Yeah, you could say he got up, but he still lost by submission. Yes, it could be potentially the greatest lightweight of all time in Khabib. That's certainly, you can, you know, put that on the table. But I just think that this is, I don't want to say a disrespectful line. I think it should be a little bit closer in my books. I think that this is probably closer to a minus 130, maybe plus 110.
I agree.
Then minus 165, minus 170 to plus 135. I just think that there's value on DuBronx here, and I just think that he has a chance. Look, we've always known him to be such a great, you know, a guy that could take people down, that could submit them at any time. But you've talked about it over the last 2 years of the, or last year of this podcast and all the fights that we've watched in Oliveira. He's changed his whole game. He's a striker now. He can do he can do a little bit of both. And I just don't think that Dustin has fought a guy of this caliber in so long that I think that it's a toss-up in that sense.
I mean,
do you know what I mean, though?
Okay, I agree with 2 points.
I'm not saying that Dustin hasn't fought good guys. He has. It's just the same style of guys.
I'll agree on 2 points that Dustin hasn't fought that style of guy in terms of Oliveira's grappling game and chops, only Khabib. But if you look at how Oliveira fights now with that long, lengthy pop, that's Max Holloway. That's literally Max Holloway. Long, lengthy fights behind a jab, like heavy,
taller, which heavy, gives him some reach.
Taller reach of a fighter, you know, heavy, quick hooks that have the potential to put you out and out. Yes, Max is a 145er and has different power. I'll accept that. But Max Holloway fights in a similar manner to the stand-up game of what DuBronx brings to the table. Now, I think DuBronx is more of a finisher, as in Max is more punches and bunches, TKO stoppages. I'll agree there. You can have that one. But I cannot agree that that the new stand-up of DuBronx that he's formulated and has been knocking people out with is something that Dustin hasn't seen in recent years, and that's because of Max Holloway.
Yeah. I guess my thought here is, like, do you think that Dustin – so his path to victory here is most likely to win by points, get late in the rounds, maybe gas Oliveira, because we've talked about this. Yeah. When's the last time Oliveira went the distance? Never.
I mean,
he never has. No, literally never. Yeah. Especially in a five-round fight. Yeah.
I mean, he can do this same exact thing that Chandler almost beat Oliveira with, and it's a step-in explosive hook, and except Dustin Poirier is much smarter than Michael Chandler, and he's going to finish you if that happens. And he did it to Conor twice, and he's done it to Eddie Alvarez, and eventually he did do it to Justin Gaethje, which is, you know, that finishing ability.
So in UFC, I don't typically buy into narratives because it's such a bang-bang sport where anything could happen in a split second. But isn't there a narrative here to be talked about confidence? Like, let's just say, you know, Dustin Poirier is coming off of 3 straight wins, but they're over Dan Hooker and 2 to Conor McGregor. Like I said, we don't know.
Dan Hooker in
– but my point –
Dan Hooker is, then was a different
player. Okay, that's fine. But my point is anybody more confident right now than in all of UFC than Charles Oliveira?
Yeah, the guy that just beat Conor fucking McGregor twice and knocked him out twice. That guy. What do you mean? Dude, it's Conor McGregor, the legend, the myth, the mystic McGregor. Like,
well, I'd also argue that the second fight was an asterisk almost. If Conor doesn't break his entire leg, that fight is totally different. So, I thought it was a close fight to begin with.
Yeah, but then it didn't matter. He finished them both ways. But I'll flip to the other side and play devil's advocate for a second. If you want to look at the narrative of confidence, I think you find that in Charles Oliveira, in the fact that he was raised in a ghetto in Brazil. DuBronx literally means ghetto in Brazil, in Portuguese. And I was watching the
documentary.
No, what's it called? Unleaded.
Unleashed or whatever.
UFC Unleashed, whatever they fucking call it nowadays. It's shameful. Yeah,
breakdowns of the fights.
Breakdowns of the fight and the narrative intros for it. And Oliveira was talking about his faith in God, and how he rose out of the ghetto by being faithful to God. And he's like, nobody can stop me because of my faith in God. And if you don't believe it, then, you know, you need to meet somebody like this, because he's like, there's been multiple people in history that are like this. And he's like, when you believe in God and he's done the things that he's done for me, you know, that confidence that he has, you know, whether you believe in God or not, or his God, you know, he believes that so strongly that I believe if we're looking at confidence narrative, that could play into his, you know, I am a warrior of God confidence of, I go out there, I finish people, you know, I am the champion now. So yes, you could say he's more confident. I would say it's more because of his faith and, you know, how that carries into the octagon. And for Dustin, it's, you know, how he stopped the hype twice in a row against Conor McGregor. And, you know, a lot of people were picking Dan Hooker over Poirier, and he went out there and beat the fuck out of Dan Hooker, who was streaking at the time.
I mean, he beat the fuck out of him, but it was a great fight that went late to the rounds.
Yeah, and that's because Dan Hooker's a great fighter, but he's made some bad decisions in matchups, which, you know, I'll tip the hat to him. He goes from Dustin Poirier to Michael Chandler to Islam Makhachev. I mean, the dude is, you know, taking on all comers. And that's why you said, well, Dan Hooker. And that's because you're thinking of who Dan Hooker is now. Dan Hooker had been winning when he fought Dustin Poirier. So again, a hype train runs into Dustin Poirier and he knocks him down. And what's happening tonight? A smaller hype train is running, is going to the buzzsaw that is, you know, Dustin Poirier.
At no point was I ever trying to downplay the level of competition that Poirier's fought. Yeah. What I was trying to get at is, in recency, the style of fighters that he's fought. And
which
Charles
I agree
is nowhere near there. And, look, since the last time he's fought a guy like Charles has been a long time. That's really what I'm trying to get at.
Yes.
This is going to be a different fight for him. And
Max is a long time. Max is – that's almost 3 years ago.
Yeah.
That Max fight.
But
know,
even
my
still,
point
like
against
I said,
that
Max,
is still,
Max is in the wrong weight class in that situation.
I'm agreeing with you there. I'll give it to you.
Every time Max has tried to fight a lightweight, he's lost.
Yeah. That's true. But, I mean, look at the lightweights that he fought. Dustin Poirier and Khabib and Conor. Like,
yeah. I get you. All right. Well, look, I mean, we could go back and forth all day. At the end of the day, the point is talking about, you know, the betting odds here. And I think that Dustin Poirier at minus 155, minus 160 is just – I just think the line's about 20 cents off, in my opinion. Give me Charles Oliveira as a dog here. Now, this kills me because I'm not – and what I might do, and because you already alluded to it, is I could potentially take Poirier in like a fat before the night starts with a bunch of dogs, take like a fat five game parlay, fighter parlay, whatever you want to call it. Take a fat five fight parlay with Poirier. That way I've got the escape route with Charles Oliveira at plus 135 as a hedge opportunity at the end of the night. But I'm also going to be taking Charles Oliveira outright. And I'm not going to prop this. I think Charles Oliveira, I don't want to say he's discredited because he is what he is. He's the champion. But I just think that the line is off, and that's just where I'm going to bet.
Yeah, and I think that we're going to see people steam Oliveira.
Me too.
That's when I'm going to jump on my straight Dustin bet. This is a bet the fighter, not bet the line for me. This is a bet the fighter, not the line.
Which makes sense, but when it comes to – okay, that's cool and all, but you're also – you're saying that I'm betting on the number one contender versus the champion.
Yeah.
So if you're going to bet the fighter, you're betting against the champion still at the end of the day.
Yes, and if it goes to the scorecards, the judges are always going to look at the champion
and you know,
with favor.
You always talk about that.
Luckily, I don't think we're going to have to worry about a decision in this one, buddy.
I don't see
it's going to be a fucking awesome fight. I can't
wait. But I don't see this like being a fight where they're going to come out scrapping early. Yeah. Like, this is going to feel it out. Maybe third round something crazy happens.
Yeah. I mean,
this could get to the cage. You know that Conor tried to do that a lot with Dustin because he thought that was his path to success. I think Oliveira has a better chance because he's so much lengthier and has so much, you know, and he's also got that finishing power and that amazing BJJ.
I mean, we say it on Bet the Farm all the time, letdown spot. This is a letdown spot for Dustin Poirier.
It is.
It's a letdown spot, but there's a couple fighters that I bet the fighter, not the line. That's Israel Adesanya, that is Jorge Masvidal, and that's Dustin Poirier.
You know what this has all the recipes of? I mean, not that it's going to happen, but it has the recipes of it is Poirier loses. Gaethje gets the next fight for Oliveira, And boom, Poirier gets another shot at Connor for round three and another payday.
I can't believe Connor doesn't want to fight Nick Diaz again. He makes so much money. And I think Nate, sorry. Jeez.
Nobody, everybody wants to fight Nick Diaz.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody wants to fight Nick Diaz. But, dude, I can't believe he doesn't want to fight Nate Diaz again because,
It's such a can of corn, bro. Like, that guy in his last three fights has looked so bad. Such a can of corn.
Yeah, it's. I can't believe it hasn't happened yet.
He keeps saying one day. I think he wants to get old and then fight him again.
Yeah, yeah. And then they cash in when they're both completely out of making
money.
And
make all the money in the world. It'll be the biggest pay-per-view draw maybe ever in the history of the UFC.
They'll probably both be at 185.
By then they will. You see Connor walking around at 190 right now for a guy that's 5'6". I'm 5'6", and I consider myself a guy that works out but also drinks a lot, and I can't get to 190 if I tried. Yeah. So Connor's – but he's bulking. I'll give him that. And he's working out. So we'll see what happens with Connor. But those are our bets for the night. So let's go ahead and close the loop on this podcast and give the people what they want. That is your flag plant of the evening.
I'm riding with Dustin Poirier,
That's
bro.
That's your flag plant? You just said you weren't even going to do it until the line moved.
I said I'm going to wait for this theme, but I also said before that – I'm going to bet it either way, even if it gets – if that parlay gets there. So even if the parlay loses, I'm going to be taking him. If the parlay loses, I'm going to leave Dustin Poirier there and then hedge, and then I don't have to worry about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
flag plant.
My flag plant is – I literally said bet the fighter, not the line, so why wouldn't it be my flag plant? If I'm betting a bad line where I'm losing 20 cents on the on a value – like we just talked about, and that's, you had three really valid points about Oliveira, and I acknowledge them because they're true, but again,
hey, stick to your guns, man.
No, I did stick to my gun, and I'm flag playing Dustin.
For everybody out there, feel a certain
I think
way,
he's the best
guns,
lightweight on the planet until Islam Makhachev gets there.
And you know what? It's like it's such a good build-up fight if it's Dustin and Makhachev because of the Khabib factor.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And
it's redemption for Dustin. You know,
the only person with the skill set to stop Islam is Charles Oliveira,
or Tony, if he's back in prime.
Tony's gone. Yeah, he's gone. He's gone. It's
hey,
over.
What about Beneil?
No. No.
No. If Beneil wins this, though, it could be interesting.
Beneil's a super interesting fighter. He's got great skills, but I think because of Oliveira's length
Beneil Makhachev.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm saying I'm standing by my point of why Oliveira has the best chance against him. It's because of his – it's the same thing of why Tony had the best chance. We'll leave it there. It's the same deal as why Tony had the best chance against Khabib because he was so dangerous on his feet and because he's so dangerous off his back and his grappling that we think he would beat the Dagestani wrestling regime.
All right, my flag plant of the card is going to be Miranda Maverick at -135. I'm all in on that. So that's one of my favorite bets of the card. I'm very wishy-washy with this card. I didn't really love anything on the main card. I didn't touch Cody. I didn't touch Ponzi's scheme. I didn't touch O'Malley. And I'm not going to touch Nunes either. There's not much you could do. I mean, I may sprinkle on a few bets here and there, like I talked about, some props. But there's nothing I truly love. And I'm not going to flag plant on Oliveira because I'm going to use that as a parlay piece to hedge later. So
yeah, I mean, I somehow have just a giant card tonight.
He's like, I only got a few bets. And then we go through the card. He's like, I'm going to bet this. I'm going to bet that. All right. Well, let me get your piggy parlay of the card.
So my piggy parlay was Kai Kara France +115, the over in the Amanda fight -135, and then Dustin -162. And again, we'll touch it here. We are leaving open a hedge against an underdog because when that 5-1 parlay gets to the end, we're gonna bet the underdog and hedge our money, and we're gonna get plus money when we're hedging.
Free
That's
profits.
Why we do it. It's free profit. If you don't set up your parlays like that, you're fucking yourself.
Yeah, so my piggy parlay, I'm just going to keep it simple, man. I'll put my own five, piece parlays in, later down, closer to fight night. That's just what I do. But I don't have a five-game parlay. I'm not going to let you guys, try to digest that. I'm just going to keep it simple. I'm going to go with that Dominic Cruz in the over bet. I really love that as a great parlay piece. It's just two, and you're going to get it at plus money, +175. I think that's such a good bet. It's probably – I could almost flag plant on that itself I love that bet.
Yeah, I mean, it for real, that's a great flag plant.
All right,
but
so
let me recap.
Well, no. Well, lastly, what's your dirty dog of the evening?
We have Ige as the burn dog.
Okay, so Ige is your burn
dog. I don't have a heavy dog. I'm not betting against O'Malley.
This is crazy, man. Because that's what I love. My burn dog is Pavia,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I mean,
as my dog of the evening, I do really like that. I'm telling you.
If I had a dirty dog, I'm betting against Jillian Robertson +300, Pacillo Cacciatore. Oh.
That's the first fight of the night, man. Yeah, nobody's going to be watching at that point.
I don't care, bro. Fade Jillian Robertson. Like, I'm not fading Sean O'Malley.
If Robertson gets around the back, it's over. So, that's just all it is.
I'm not betting that, by the way.
Yeah. I don't really have much of a dog. Like, I mean, I'm betting some dogs because they're -105, but I don't want to give that as, like, my burn dog of the week. So, you know what? My out there burn dog of the week isn't just to take Paiva. It's to take him by KO, and you're going to get that at an insane – let me see what it is. Paiva to win by KO. You can get that at +900. Let's just call that the burn dog of the night. I could see for the first time Sean O'Malley talk such a big game.
Gets clipped coming in on a big
– exactly. Big goes with that punch. Big right hand, leaves his left hand low, and just gets clipped.
Head kick maybe. You never know.
Something – or – you know, honestly, it sounds crazy, but I don't want to keep saying, like, he's injury-prone, but, you know, something happens with those leg kicks that he throws, and he's hobbled, and then he just grounds the pounds, and you get the TKO.
Yeah, yeah.
So give me Paiva +900 by KO TKO as my burn dog of the week. And that is going to wrap it up. If you want to give a little quick recap of your betting card, since it's about a full paragraph long.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we're going to start the night with Miranda Maverick at -130. We're going to move into the headliner of the early prelims, Andre Muniz.
I don't know how to pronounce it either.
I'm just going to call him
Muniz.
Versus Eric Anders, -145. That's a fade Eric Anders play. Then we're moving into the heavyweight fight on the prelims, tied to Tuivasa, -110 as a pick'em. Then I have that Dominic Cruz and the over parlay locked in. Then we move to Dan Ige versus Josh Emmett. That's my burn dog, +145. I locked it in at. It's at +135 right now. And then we move to the Kai Kara France parlay and finish with Dustin Poirier. Watch out. Watch our Instagram feed because I'm probably going to put out my Jeff Neal Ponzi scheme play. It's either going to be the over -150 or it's going to be Ponzi straight up. Watch for it.
So me and Wes are on everything together. I faded – or not faded. I laid off of a few of the plays, but the only thing I disagree with, I like Charles Oliveira as a dog here. And that wraps it up for UFC 269, the MMA Barn Burner Show presented by Bet the Farm Podcast. We'll have another Bet the Farm Podcast out for you by tomorrow. So enjoy. Wes, let's make some money.
Let's do it, boy. This is going to be a fucking awesome card.
Can't wait.
Low-key. For the semi-hardcores, it's going to be an absolute barn burner.